welcome back to another episode of the Honest as a Mother podcast. I am joined today by Dawn Barclay. Dawn is a mom, she is an author, and she has all of the tips and tricks for us that she wrote in a book for traveling with your children. And I really do want to dive into the book with her a little bit later in the show. But for now, please welcome Dawn and all of her tips for us to the Honest as a Mother podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I'm so excited. Like I was saying off the podcast, I got a lot of very similar questions from probably like 50 to 100 different women, very similar questions, but we're all, I think, in it for the same reason. And one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on is because I am traveling this year. I am doing a 2-day car trip with my two children to Florida because I'm stupid or something. I don't know.
I'm sure you're not stupid. You're ambitious.
I'm hopeful. I'm ambitious. All of the things. But like to me, driving with them seemed better than flying. I don't know why. So we're just going to roll with it. But anyway, I'll tell you why about that later. But so for maybe someone that has never read your book or followed your work previously, could you give us a little introduction about yourself?
Sure. I have been an author and a travel I've been a travel columnist for over 30 years for various travel trade publications. I grew up in the travel world. My parents owned a big travel agency in Manhattan, and then they ventured off into short-term apartment rentals and villas way before Airbnb existed. So I was doing all their sales and marketing. And then I came to be either a contributing editor or a senior editor at several travel trades. When I wanted and needed a book like this, which was in the early 2000s, it didn't exist. And I started to try to write it. I interviewed Tony Atwood, and anybody who's involved in autism knows Dr. Tony Atwood is an expert. Dr. Ellen Littman, who's an expert in ADHD, especially with girls. And I got those interviews down, and then I kind of hit a wall because I didn't have a lot of other people to interview. And it wasn't until a group called IBCCES created a designation called the Certified Autism Travel Professional that I knew exactly how I wanted to write the book, because I knew I could hopefully interview those people, and they were very gracious. And many, many of them gave me interviews and introduced me to their clients. And many of them also were families of special needs kids. So, whether it was the travel professional themselves or their clients, I got a lot of information, and I spoke to advocates and allies of people on the spectrum. And there was a lot of information now on the internet that wasn't there back in 2000. So it was a much easier book to write.
For sure. And I think that there's so much more, like you said, information, there's so much more knowledge, there's so much more conversation really happening around autism, anxiety, ADHD, like all of the things now that we are able to sometimes openly have more conversation, and more people have an understanding of, you know, this might look a little bit more difficult for this mom and dad because their child has autism or their child has ADHD or anxiety or whatever. That's amazing. Like it's such a valuable resource, because I'm sure that you've run into conversations with other parents that, you know, they're just like, I just won't travel. That just won't be something that we'll do.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, because that same organization, IBCCES, who created that designation, as well as they designate, train and designate hotels and resorts and different venues as certified autism centers, and they certify autism professionals as well. They did a study of 1,000 special needs parents and found out of those, 87% would not travel. But of those, 93% said they would if they knew where to go and what to do. So I felt that this book was so necessary, but also for neurotypical children, because any child, when taken out of their comfort zone, becomes anxious and inflexible.
Yes. You and know. I think even us as parents, we become anxious and inflexible because the uncertainty of what the hell is the kid going to do on the plane or in the car or anything, like traveling, period, I think is always stressful. There's time crunches and, you know, worries about luggage and everything else. Like, say you're just traveling with adults, like that can be stressful all on its own. Now add a kid into the mix that you have to take care of. You have to keep on some sort of a routine. Otherwise, like, you all go down, right?
Right. And who needs routine and predictability more than children? Children on the spectrum. So they all need predictability, but a lot of my tips involve creating predictability, creating a frame of reference for the child long before you go on the vacation, so that when you get to the vacation, the tantrums that everybody worries about, the sensory meltdowns, hopefully won't happen because you've seen where they could happen. You've seen and predicted the triggers ahead of time, and you've got several tools in your arsenal to avoid them.
Exactly. That is my hope from our conversation. You know, I'm finding as a parent, there is basically no right or really even sometimes wrong way of doing it. But I find, like, the more people I connect with, like yourself, it's like, we'll just add it to the toolbox. I may never have to use it. Maybe I'll use it all of the time, but it doesn't matter. It's like having a toolbox full of information for all of the just in case stuff. It's so valuable.
Yeah. And these tips, in several instances, I'll offer more than one type of tip because you know your child, and one tip might work and another might not. And it's going to be trial and error for a while until you get it down.
Absolutely. Okay. So let's talk tips, because that's what we're all here for.
Okay. So what would you like to know?
I'm thinking let's start car. We'll stick on the ground first.
Okay. And you know, it's not just a road trip. You've got car transportation, even when you go from, say, the airport to your hotel. So it's not, you're not avoiding it if you take a plane.
Fair.
And yeah. So what you're going to do, because I know, how old is your child?
So I have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old.
Okay. So great. You're going, a lot of what I talk about is introducing the idea of travel way ahead of time and getting buy-in. So you're going to figure out your trip, and you're going to, you know, you're going to draw out a route, and you're going to look at what's along the way that might be of interest to your children. Over a period of time is this going to take? Is this a 2-day straight drive, or how many miles are you going?
I don't know the exact amount of like miles. But so I live in Ontario, Canada, and we're driving to Florida.
So, wow. Okay.
Like, everybody does it. Like, everyone who's told me they've done it, they said it's like such a great, amazing, like, it's very easy drive. I'll let you know if it was really easy with a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old in the car. But so we're going to stop, but my parents do it every year, and they always stop overnight too. And they say it takes like 12 hours the first day and say 8 or 9 the next day.
I think you're going to want to give yourself more time than that, because I think you're going to, do your children tend to sleep during the day or at night?
Only at night.
Okay. So you may want to do some of that driving at night while they're sleeping and do some activities during the day to keep them busy, but you're going to figure out on your route where there are rest stops or playgrounds or attractions that might be a fun for them so that the trip becomes fun.
Yes.
You know, you can mark out where zoos or aquariums are. If they have special interests, special museums that they're interested in, like dinosaurs or insects or whatever, I list tons of those type of special interest venues at the back of my book. But, you know, research is your friend in this case, because you're going to want to time it out, and you're not going to want more than a couple of hours in the car at any one time, I think, unless you're sleep driving while they're asleep. So I do a lot of the touring during the day and the driving at night, if you can, you know, or even if you split with your partner, some of that driving, you're going to want to, like I said, discuss it in advance, get some buy-ins, find out what would be along the route that would be of interest. You're going to want to check out your car, obviously, ahead of time, because you don't want any surprises along the way. If your children were on the spectrum, you'd want to minimize the interior noise.
Okay.
You would also want to make sure you're not driving during rush hour, because you're going to be stuck in traffic, which drives everybody crazy.
Mm-hmm. And then you know, the heat kind of goes on in the car, right? When everybody's irritated and
yeah. If you were renting a car, I tell you to bring your own car seat, and there's an explanation of why in the book. And you're going to want to make sure you have supplies of your kids' favorite foods, their electronics with noise canceling headphones. The nice thing about traveling in a car, especially when you're with children on the spectrum, is you have lots of room to bring their favorite toys and anything they need, because some children do better with their own sheets and blankets and toiletries and toys. And you have the room to do that when you're driving. You're going to want to have some creative travel games at the ready. And I list a bunch of those on top of, like, find the different the license plates from different states. But there are a bunch of different travel games that can keep the kids occupied when they're not watching their electronics. And it never hurts to incentivize good behavior, whether that means that you bring some surprises along, some surprise little presents that you give them at various times during the trip, so they have something to look forward to. It's also good timing. So if kids are getting antsy, maybe it's a good idea to show them on a stopwatch or on a clock, we're going to be stopping at this time, so that they know, and something's predictable about it, that they know that when that time, and give yourself a little leeway in case there's traffic and you don't get there on time. But you want to give yourself something for them to look forward to that they don't have to wait too long for.
Okay. I like that tip, because you know what, that's also relatable. Cause if you think about, like, when I can think about when I was a kid, and that was something we would always ask my parents when we traveled, like, how much longer, what time will it be when we get there? Like, we wanted, like, something tangible that we could see, like, it's 2 o'clock. He said we would be there by 3:30. So now I know how much longer I have. I like that. That's a great tip.
Yeah. You might also want some toys in the seat back pocket in front of them so they can reach for them, but there might be others you just want to hand back to them, you know, at different times during the trip. Because one of the things people said is when with children that tend to get upset easily, they drop their binky, or they drop their bottle, or they drop a toy, and you can't exactly pull over to hand it back to them. Mm-hmm. So that could be a possible issue. You may want to have duplicates of certain things up front with you that you can hand back.
I was just going to say, like, have like a little basket or something up front of, like, the extra soothers or wipes or just whatever the case may be.
Oh yeah. Also different wipes and a change of clothing. Mm-hmm. Count on car sickness. Even if it won't happen, pack as if it will. Always be prepared. Always have a backup plan.
That is such a good tip too. My children have never been car sick, but someone recently had said to me that their kid got car sick. And I was like, I don't think I've ever thought about my kids being car sick, only because they never have. But, like, that is something you should always keep in the back of your mind. Cause even as an adult, like, I don't get car sick almost ever, but I have. I don't normally get, like, boat sick, but I have, like, it happens.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So absolutely. Such a great tip. Great tip. Okay.
Great.
Another thing that a lot of people asked me about, and I don't know if you have anything further to say about it. I know you said if they, like, for my kids, for example, because they don't nap, maybe particularly do some driving at night. What about the kids who do nap? Like, are we just, I would think that we just drive and they'll fall asleep in the car, or they won't, and that will suck too. But do you have tips for anyone who's maybe anxious about keeping their kids on some sort of a nap schedule? Because I know that was a big question I got. Like, how do I get them to nap in the car?
I actually, nobody spoke about that, because I think they were just so focused on keeping the child happy and not tantruming or having a sensory meltdown, that nobody right. was really worrying about sticking to that particular schedule, that they will fall asleep from mm-hmm. hopefully from the rocking of the car. But I mean, every kid is different. So I don't know that you have to be that tied to that nap schedule, but again, you know your own child. I mean, this is an adventure, as things are going to be a little different. And I think you can explain to your child ahead of time, you know, maybe the bath schedule is not going to be the same. Maybe the nap schedule is not going to be the same, but when we get home, we're going to go back to the way it was, but now let's have an adventure.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's what I was thinking too. Like, I got that question a lot and I understand the question, but like, also I thought about like when we, so our cottage is like 3 hours away and I've traveled there lots of times when my kids were really little, and when they were smaller, like I didn't care how much they slept in the car. Like, and the more they slept, the less they bothered me on the drive. So I actually thought it was okay. And then I kind of like kept my mind set of like, you know, like you said, this is an adventure. We're on vacation. It's a little bit different. So like maybe their bedtime didn't look the same. And did that suck for us sometimes? Yeah, but we made it up there in one piece and we didn't kill each other along the way. So I counted it as a win.
Yeah. I don't know any kid who isn't excited when they don't have to go and do their nap. I think most kids would be excited that they're going to get out of it.
Yes. Agreed. if someone is listening and has a kid who is like, I love my nap and do not screw with it. Like, I want to know, how you did it. I want to know this child.
Yeah. Because this is a fun adventure. This is like, I'm getting to do all the stuff I don't get to do at home. That might be one of the perks.
Absolutely. And I just thought I'd make you laugh here because you said like, start talking about the trip well in advance. We have been talking about this trip since the pandemic started because we were supposed to go.
Oh, wow.
So now we're going and my kids are amped and I'm like thinking like, do they even think this is real anymore? But it's really going to happen.
Mind I think you, it's going to be an adventure for you. That's a long drive. I know my parents drove me to from New York to Key Biscayne when I was probably about 7 or 8. And all I remember was the signs leading to Stuckey's, not Stuckey's, Stuckey's was the peanut brittle you got south of the border. Okay. About 200 miles before you get to, I guess on I-95, before you get to south of the border, you start getting these really funny signs. And then when you got there, after all these signs, it was like nothing. Now it's huge. Now it's like this big place for you. There's a hotel there. There's restaurants. Cool. There's so much stuff you can buy. But then it wasn't. We just finally got to south of the border and said, what is this? But it was funny. And we remember, and I remember Stuckey peanut brittle, because of course I'm going to remember all the fattening things that were along the way.
They were delicious. And those things become like your, I don't know, like your, the thing you do every time you drive it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So some, like, I love road trips because we only really did road trips as a kid. So we never really went on a plane very often and we did stuff like that. So that's like where I realize it's going to be quite a journey, but I'm also really excited. I think we're going to make a lot of memories and I'm hopeful that this will be like a yearly thing and that, you know, every year, I mean, when they're older, I think I would like to fly, but for now we can make the memories, hopefully.
Yeah. I think the key for you is really going to be the stops you make along the way and don't make the destination the end all. It's all the places that you can stop and keep them busy. So maybe they do fall asleep more in the car because they're so exhausted after seeing some of these places.
Absolutely. Another tip that someone had given me, and I know like for my kids, it will be a great idea, is we're making sure that we pick a hotel that has a pool.
Yeah. Yeah.
My kids love to swim. And then we all know swimming exhausts our children. I don't know what the magic is behind it, but it's magical. And so we're making sure that we pick somewhere that has a good pool so that, you know, we can have dinner and then they can swim their little hearts out and they'll probably be exhausted from that alone and get them to bed and then up early again in the morning.
Yeah, excellent idea. Also look for hotels with kitchenettes or kitchens, because that way you don't have to always eat out. Because, and I give a lot of tips in the book about restaurant dining and and how to handle it. But everybody always says, bring, you know, to have a kitchenette and bring some of the foods that you want to make sure you have on hand that are your kids' favorites.
Yes.
I had one mother who always brings a blow up little swimming pool with her because she doesn't know if she's going to have a bathtub in the hotel and her kids were only bathed. So she sets the blow up, she blows it up and she puts it in the shower and they can have their baths.
That's a, such an awesome tip, you know, and that's something people don't always think about. Like my kids have a shower here and there. So, you know, I think I could live with just telling them, well, you have to have a shower, or like, we're only going to be one night. So, okay, maybe don't, you can have a bath when we get to the house in Florida. But that is such a handy tip because we've done that too at the cottage. There's only showers. And the first year we went, my husband and I were like, oh my God, what are we going to do? So we did the same thing. We bought like a little, a blow up. It was like a float, but it worked. Like, and we actually just bathed them because eventually they get too big for the sink. Right. And you're like, oh my God, what are we going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Some parents also make sure they have a balcony. So they have a place that they can chat while the kids are going to sleep and they don't wake them up. But if you have a child that you don't trust around a balcony, you can get an alarm, a lock, alarm to put on the door so that if they do try to open it, you'll know.
Okay.
There are hotels that have really good security systems so that if your kid did get away, I'm not saying that your child, your children run, but some children do. You want to have a hotel with a really good security system and cameras to find them easily.
That's a really good tip too.
Yeah.
Because it's those things, right? It's always those things we don't always think about. But like our kids, they do go through a lot sometimes when we're traveling, when we're changing their environment, when we're, you know, whatever, sleeping in the same room as them. Like, I feel like my kids are going to look at me like, why are they in the bed over there beside us? Like, why are they here?
Yeah. Some people go in and go to a suite hotel just so that kid, they can have a little bit of privacy from the children. Mm-hmm. But if you have a child that needs to decompress because they're on the spectrum and they have had a sensory overload and you don't have the money for two rooms, I think it was Tony Atwood that suggested empty out a closet and put their linens in the closet. You don't have to close the closet, but it gives them a little bit of privacy and some quiet to, and their own space to decompress.
Right. Yeah. That's a great tip. That's a really great idea, actually. Okay. Now I want to talk planes.
Okay.
Planes give me anxiety for obvious reasons. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
But also, the thought of, so my three-year-old is like sometimes a little bit difficult and she's very sensitive, and like my five-year-old wants to go on a plane so badly and I would take him in a heartbeat, but the thought of flying with them was too overwhelming for me. Like the car ride just seems like it's going to be an easier route. Like this is what makes sense for me and my husband. Mm-hmm. And then interestingly enough, the conversations I've been having this week leading up to this conversation is a lot of people feel the same way. It seems like there is a lot of anxiety around the plane. I think a lot of it's coming from the parents, because I think a lot of it comes from the same things, like how do we deal with napping and, you know, crying, and what are we worried about people judging us because our kid is crying and they're stuck on the plane with the crying kid. And anyway, so I'm just wondering, like, what tangible tips can we give to parents who would like to fly because they don't want to sit in a car for 2 days?
Of course. And it's interesting that you mentioned the people looking, the insensitive gawkers, because I did put a whole section about that in the airline section.
Oh, good.
Good. So it's right there. I think that the airline or the airplane section is the longest chapter in the book, or one of the longest chapters, because there's so much involved. And so some of the things you can do in preparation is to, you probably are not going to use social stories, which are something that people on the autistic spectrum use, but picture books that talk about their favorite characters traveling might be a good way to introduce the idea of travel to children, role-playing some of the aspects of being on the plane so they understand that they're going to be sitting for a while and they're not going to be able to get up. They may be in their car seat. You're never going to want to have a child on your lap. You're always going to want to purchase a seat for them because it's just it's not safe, even though some of the airlines allow it, it's just not safe. Mm-hmm. There are programs like Wings for Autism, which took a hiatus over COVID, but are coming back now, where you can actually go to the airport and have go through the whole process from arrival to boarding, up until boarding. So you have that experience behind you, so the child knows what to expect.
Oh, okay.
So that's one idea. There are also various airlines that you can just call and get a tour. If you call and ask in advance, you're going to want to use a certified autism travel professional if you're indeed got a child on the spectrum, because they can arrange all this for you.
Okay.
There are certain airports that have sensory spaces, which have less crowds and low lighting. And those are harder to find. I do list them in the book. I believe there's one at Pittsburgh Airport. But there's a program called TSA Cares, which if you arrange for it in advance, you'll have somebody come and accompany you through the through security. And so if there's, they've been trained to see if anything's triggered the child and to help you out. So that's a really valuable program to have. And I have a long explanation of that. If your child's a picky eater, you want to bring food along that you know that the child will eat. Arrange for special meals if that's what it's going to, you know, if that's what you need. If your journey involves a layover, it's really good idea to do some advanced research to see what services are available in that intermediary airport. Okay. And you're going to want to make sure that your onboard luggage includes things that will both distract and calm the child during and before the flight. You're going to want to keep any medications on you, never pack them in your regular luggage. You're going to bring, in every chapter I list this go-to bag, because I figure nobody's reading this book from beginning to end. They're going to, like, you would go to the either the airline or the road trip section. You're not going to read the rest right now. So every chapter I repeat this go-to bag, which has all the things your child needs. You almost always noise-canceling headphones so they can block out the noise. You might want a mask so they can block out some of the light. You're going to want their favorite toys. You're going to want, if you had a child on the spectrum, you'd want fidget toys or anything, sensory toys. But I can't emphasize enough electronics. Everybody was talking about bringing their iPad or their whatever the child can watch all their favorite television on and their movies, because that'll keep them occupied. Anything to color with, anything that is favorite for them that'll keep them distracted is really important. Mm-hmm. Also, one other thing is that if you're nervous about how the child's going to react to turbulence, and this is important to me because I really hate turbulence, so I
me
get
too.
It.
Me too. I think we're going down every single time.
Yeah. So you and I both, does your partner have like gouge marks on the arm from when you sort of like suck your nails into that arm? So
I have never flown with my husband. So I don't know. My husband's never even flown. So I don't know. Like, I think he would be gouging into my arm. Like, I think,
oh, okay.
I would be the calm flyer in that department.
Okay. Probably I'm not so calm.
Me either. I'm the worst flyer. So anyway, sorry.
Anyway, I would go on a country road, on a bumpy country road, and have them drive with you and close their eyes and say, this is what the airline's going to feel like, the airplane's going to feel like occasionally when it gets bumpy. See, there's no problem with it. It's kind of fun, right? It's like, you know, a ride at an amusement park, if they have that frame of reference. And also, one of the things you should keep in mind is when you go and check in, maybe one of you checks in while the other one stays with the child, so that you can avoid, anytime you can avoid a line, it's always a good idea, or a crowd, and you can take off for a quieter space. Now, you did also mention, what do you do when people are gawking? Mm-hmm. Because your child's having a meltdown. And many times, you know, a lot of special needs parents worry about this because they're afraid people are going to think I'm not a good parent. They're going to think my child's a brat and is having a, they don't understand that this is a sensory meltdown because of all the new, you know, stimuli they're going through. And the thing is, it's your child is the most important thing you have to worry about. I wouldn't worry about those people. Mm-hmm. But some people with children on the spectrum have their children so okay with themselves, accepting of themselves, they'll go over to a stranger and say, oh, I saw you were looking at me. You know, my name is so-and-so and I have autism. And when I get excited, I flap my arms. Isn't that cool? So that they're teaching people who don't understand that, you know, these are normal people with, you know, an issue. They're not something other than they are, you know, that they themselves are. And yeah. The act of traveling with a special needs child not only makes the child a global citizen because they understand a little bit about the world around them, but it also educates those who don't have special needs about what it means to have special needs.
Absolutely. And I think for anyone who's listening that has a neurotypical child, I think that is it's the same thing, right? Like there's nothing that I've really been able to like wrap my head around, like why people would gawk at someone with a crying baby. Like it's a baby, it cries. Like,
yeah.
Or it's a child. Children cry. They get scared. Yeah. They're impatient. They're assholes sometimes. Like it's okay. Like this is what kids do. And there's so I just think too, like I love what you said, like just you really have to kind of work through it yourself and just remember like whatever they think doesn't matter.
Right. And always sort of approach things with a sense of humor. I found that in life, humor is the only thing that's gotten me through. I can laugh at anything. You have to laugh at life because it's funny.
You do. And like everybody kind of laughs like like what I just said right there, like, okay, the kids can kind of be an asshole sometimes. Like sometimes I just roll things off like that. If I'm like a bit embarrassed in public or something and my kid's having a meltdown, or if I was on an airplane, they were having a meltdown, I would just be like, oh my God, please help me. Please help me. Like, let's just make humor out of it and just call her what she's being. I say she, cause I know it's going to be my daughter. you know, let's just call her what she is. She's kind of being a jerk right now. And like, I'm her mom, so I can say that. And then we can all laugh about it. And it's like, okay, so this mom is like content with the fact that her kid's having a meltdown. I can kind of address the situation, which we all know is a terrible one. And ha ha ha, my kid's a jerk. And end of story. Let's just move on now.
Yeah. I mean, you could even give a wink to the person looking at you. They know what you're going through. It's like, you roll your eyes as long as the child doesn't see.
That's right.
You know, like, I would say, you know, or shrug to the person, like, what could I do? Like you're in on it. You get it.
Yeah, exactly. And even if they don't have kids, like they get it. Even if you are with people on an airplane that don't have children, like they know what children are about. They've seen a child before in their life. Like, you know, so, okay. The last question I have for you, and I already know your answer, but I just know it, but I'm noticing that in parenting, a lot of us go in with there's our expectation. It's way up here. And I think a lot of the times, especially when it comes to traveling or changing a routine or just anything in general in regards to change with our kids, I think the parents make it worse. I think that maybe I wondered what your thoughts were on maybe like parents also just need to lower the expectation a little bit and realize like, there may be some bumps in the road because this is just a new adventure, like you said, and we just kind of have to maybe go with the flow a little bit more.
I think what you're getting at is my point that you have to make a trip child-centric. And that means that once you have kids, your old way of traveling is gone until those kids are off on their own and you're traveling different, hence the name of the book. So what does it mean to create a child-centric vacation? First of all, pacing. You may not get to everything that you wanted to do every single day. So give yourself a break, maybe plan one or two things, or maybe just one thing every day. And then, like you say, spend some time at the pool. Just know that it has to revolve around the child. You'll still get to do some of the things you want, but if you have to go out to a great dinner at a fancy restaurant, get a sitter. And there are ones that are specially trained for kids with special needs, or you can just find a sitter. You can even travel with a sitter from home that can accompany you with for the whole trip, or bring, you know, your mother or your mother-in-law or your sister or somebody to take part of the work from you. Also, I talked a little bit about special interests earlier. You know, the reason I put such a long chapter in the back of the book with special interests is because children on the spectrum tend to have circumscribed interests that they might obsess about 16 hours a day. So I try to think of all the special interests and then break it down by state and city and say, well, here are places you can sort of indulge those passions. If your kid loves rocks, maybe you take a side trip to a quarry, you know, or, you know, there were kids who, there was one child who wanted to go to a mustard museum and the parents took him. And that's all he could talk about for the rest of the trip is how great it was that his parents took him to the mustard museum. And those are the memories. They may not have been the memories that you intended to create when you started on the trip. And they may not be anything, you may not like mustard, but you know what, when you see how much the child grows to love travel because of that, it's going to make it worth it to you.
Yes. I wish I could clap, but then everyone, like, oh, that hurts my ears. And I think there were several points that you mentioned there. Like, number one, I think we need to go in it like more realistic and realize that, yes, yeah, we want to travel for ourselves. Don't bring your kids, like, end of story, right?
Yeah.
And, but like, if you're going to travel with your children, it's really about them, right? And my husband and I have had this conversation because we're going to Florida and there's so many things that we want to do and we're only going to be there for 10 days. And so we've planned one thing per day with a day in the middle of just lounging around the pool.
Yeah. See, that's really smart.
Yeah. Because there was one day that I even said, like, we can do this and this. And my husband was like, I don't even think we should attempt it. Like, the one thing that we want to do is like right beside another thing we want to do. So he was like, let's plan for like one of them. And then if we have time and we can do both, great. But I don't even think we should attempt it because kids.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many parents said that they ended up, most of their pictures from the early travels were of the kid on their back sleeping because the kid couldn't keep up with the pace. I have one mom who said, now when we go camping, because they do a lot of camping trips, we spend that first day decompressing. And she has one neurotypical and one neurodiverse child. And the neurotypical one is the one who wants to just sit and read in the tent.
I believe it.
It's never bad to sort of organize the trip around what your children are going to enjoy and really gauge how much they're going to be able to take at any one time.
And I also loved what you said just about, like, basically how like the small moments will be the big moments. Like, I can't wait to give you my feedback after my trip because we're going to Disneyland. And so I think, like, you know, my kids are, don't get me wrong, I know they're going to love Disneyland. But so when we're going into this, I'm thinking when we come home, they're going to say, the best part was when we went to Disneyland. It was the best day ever. You know what they'll say? Like, the best part was when we were laying at the pool. Like, something where you're like, really? That was it? That was your best part? Like, I paid $100 for each of you to get in the door there, but that wasn't your favorite?
Remember when so-and-so vomited when we got off of the ride? Wasn't
totally
that
cool? That's what I mean. But I love that you said that too, because I think as parents, we can put a lot of pressure on ourselves to make everything so like big and magical and whatever. And really, honestly, and truly, it will be somebody vomited in the car on the way there. And that'll be the best thing ever. And they'll talk about it the whole time. And then they're like, oh yeah. And mom took us to Disneyland. Like, it was fine. It was great. It was fine. But remember when she puked in the car?
Yeah. I have to tell you a funny story. When we were younger, my parents, we were in England, my father's British, and we spent a lot of time in England growing up. And we went to a hotel. I still remember it. It was called the Mendip Motel. And they had this shoe shining, electronic shoe shining machine. And that's what I remember, that and some cream of vegetable soup from some restaurant that we went to. These are the things that stood out to me that I still remember now, many, many years later.
I know, it's the little things, they're the big things, right? And that's what makes a trip like so magical for our kids. It's the big things too, but it really is the little things.
Yeah.
Can you please tell everyone where, like, I know we've talked a lot about what your book is about, but where can they find it? I will also put links to it, but please share where they can reach out to you, connect with you, buy your book, your social media handles, everything you've got.
Sure. So again, the name of the book is Traveling Different Vacation Strategies for Parents of the Anxious, the Inflexible, and the Neurodiverse. It is available on all, or it will be available on all online retailers as of August 15th. It is available for pre-order now in the hardcover and the audiobook version, but unfortunately the ebook can't be purchased until the 15th of August.
Okay.
I've got a website called travelingdifferent.com. It's with one L in traveling. And on there, I do have links to where you can buy the book, but I also have information. It's a blog that will update the book because things are always changing. And even if I label something as autism friendly or a certified autism center this year, next year, it might not be. And so it's always good to do your due diligence and make sure that any place that's mentioned, not only the location's the same, the phone number, the hours, everything's the same, but also find out what their designation means if you have special needs children, and make sure that the, like if they have a sensory afternoon where there's low lighting and less crowds, make sure it's the day that you're actually going to be in town, because some museums only have it one day a month.
Okay.
So you're going to want to check that. But I do have Twitter. It's at Traveling Diff with two Fs. On Facebook, it's Traveling Different. And yeah, they can find out. My email address will be in the book. And if people like, when you have your trip done, I'd love to hear about it. I will put people's anecdotes into the blog and it may end up in a second edition. And if something I've listed as a resource does not prove to be good for you, or if you found something you think is better, I'd love to hear it. If I've opened up the world to you in any way, please write and let me know, because I'd love to hear that. And please go and ask your local library to buy a copy so it's available for people who may not be able to afford it.
Oh, I'm so going to do that. I've never heard anybody ask that before. That is such an, I didn't even know that was like a thing you could do.
Yeah, you can always ask your library to carry something. It'll be available. If you go to bookstores, they'll have to order it for you, because the publisher is mostly concentrating on online. Mm-hmm. But I always think it's important. I'd love every library to carry it.
Yeah, me too. It's such an important tool for parents. So it would be great for the libraries to carry it. So then, you know, if there is someone that maybe can't afford to buy it, it's just easily accessible.
Yes.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Dawn. This has been incredible. I've got so many tips in my pocket now, and so do my listeners. And I've appreciated this conversation so much.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you having me, and I really hope your trip is a success.
I'm going to let you know. Don't give me your phone number, Dawn, because I might have to call you. Hey, I don't know. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to another week, and I'll talk to you soon. See ya. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Honest as a Mother podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. I'm really looking forward to hearing from you.